All right, welcome everyone to the world of Salvador Dali. My name is Margaret Johnson. I am the Chief Creative Officer at Goodby Silverstein & Partners, and I would love to introduce you to our panel today. To my left, I have Dr. Hank Hine. He's the Executive Director at the Dali Museum, and my colleagues Jeff Goodby and Martin Ludvigsen, which that's a hard one for me to say, you guys, because I have a southern accent. So I'm feeling
you
like
did.
I nailed it.
You pulled it off.
Nailed it.
Anyway, he is our director of AI and, and innovation at Goodby Silverstein & Partners. And we're here today to talk about Salvador Dali, AI, and the future of creativity. So, Hank, the Dali Museum is one of the most innovative museums in the world. You are one of the first to incorporate VR into a museum. You most recently have been using OpenAI's Dali in your exhibits. And I think that's just really interesting because traditionally museums preserve art and they're kind of looking backward. And in your museum, you are incorporating innovation and looking forward. So can you talk about a little bit just about the museum and why that's right for your museum?
Sure. Well, what is a museum? We asked that question. And the name museum is a really convenient place to start. A museum, the Greek word for the place of the muse. So art is that really special thing where what inspires you, like the Parthenon, where they had a Pinacoteca, where the spirits come down, it gathers human experience and compacts it. It's that magical thing. And technology helps connect us to art more readily and allows us to be participants as well as observers. And we keep that in mind as we do our programming. You know, Dali is known for the mustache and for the melting clocks, but he's so much more than that. And that, I hope, is what you'll be able to take away today, that so much more. He was relentlessly curiosity. He wanted to break all boundaries. You can think of him in a way like, remember Marlon Brando in The Wild One? The waitress asks him, "And what are you rebelling against?" He says, "Well, what have you got?" So Dali was the first artist, painter to work with Buñuel. He made films with Buñuel. He made sets for Hitchcock. He made an animated film with Disney. He was the first artist to use video and make performance pieces. He worked with Alice Cooper, as we show here, to make a hologram. And from very early on, he used to co-sign his wife's name to his works, showing that he understood the collaborative nature of creativity. He's an amazing character, and that's what motivates us.
Well, that's a good transition, because on the topic of collaboration, I'm curious how this collaboration originally started between the Dali Museum and Goodby Silverstein & Partners.
Boy, good question. Hank and I share a lot of interests, and we started, I think, as friends over our interest in fine art printing, like etchings and just hand art, which we both do, and he became the head of a teaching thing at a University of South Florida, a graduate printing program, and moved to Florida, and ultimately took this job with the Dali, and I've continued as friends with him because we're interested in everything. I mean, I think we're like Dali in that way. We love science, we love art, we love food, we love drinking. it all goes together, and that's kept us together as friends, but it's also created this chance to make something at our company with Margaret and people at the company for the museum. And I think about these things as kind of, like Margaret was saying, a museum can become a sort of solid, a thing that doesn't change. And I think that what we do is we try to create, like, I call it like a new ride at Disneyland to make people come back. so that there's always something new, something to come for it that is beyond what was there the last time you came. And much of it is interactive, which is really, really fun.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we really believe in the power of images to express our humanity, and that whether it's communication art, like Goodby Silverstein, or whether it's fine art, like a museum, it's an opportunity to harness this powerful thing called images to dig into who we are and who we aspire to be. Now, I asked you to join the board at the Dolly Museum, I think it was about 20 years ago. And do you remember there was a ceremony where you were made a knight in the Order of Salvador? There were some intoxicants involved.
There were. I don't know what the benefits of being in that order actually are at this point. but I'm in it.
Well, you have the medallion. Medal. And yeah. That medallion and $5 will buy you a cappuccino.
Yeah, that's right. No, my association there has been really, really productive and great, certainly for the company in a creative sense, because, you know, people come to us and say, what if they did this? And then a year later, it actually happens. It's amazing. And we've learned so much along the way. We've taught ourselves so much. And I think that that's the real connection to creativity here, you know, is to be relentlessly curious, like Dolly, to care about everything, notice everything, and that will always give you a role in the context of an AI world. That will be your role, you know. No one else has that memory that you have. It can't be scraped by the AI. That thing that the guy said to you on the beach, or that fight that you had where the guy punched you in the face. You can see what kind of past I've had. But no one else had those experiences, and they're unique to you, and they always will be.
Yeah, and I think the commonality, too, is that we have this power when we're using images, when we're taking people's attention, when we're making art of any kind, and we have an obligation to make it transformative. It's got to take us to a new place, take us beyond in that manner of exploration, in that manner of kind of an ethical responsibility to lift everybody who is sharing this time and space and vision together.
You know, I think, like, just for us as an agency, creativity actually starts with imagining something that has never been done before, and then using innovation to bring that thing to life. And I feel like we're so lucky because we have our own in-house innovation lab, and Martin heads that up. And so many wonderful, wonderful, unexpected things have come out of that lab over the years for ourselves, for our clients, for nonprofits. And a couple of my favorites. The first one is something that we did for Doritos a couple of years ago for Super Bowl. We were doing a project with Megan Thee Stallion, and we had remixed this song and created a music video, and we wanted it to be like exclusive, right? Exclusive content that you could only get like right off the chip. And we, you know, tried lots of experiments with the lab, went to Snapchat, they said it couldn't be done, and then the lab figured out how to make it happen. And to me, that was just such a cool experience because we were educating Snapchat in that moment. And we actually turned a chip into a media channel, which is amazing. One more thing that's one of my favorites is an AR app that we created with the Innovation Lab. And it was kind of inspired by my daughter, actually. She was, I think, in the fourth or fifth grade at the time. And she asked me why there were no stories about women in her history book. And I go to the lab and I say, okay, how can we fix this problem? There has to be a way to fix this. And their idea was to create an AR app, super simple to use for kids. You hold it over a picture of, you know, one of the guys that is in the history book, Abe Lincoln, George Washington, and it serves up a story of a woman who did something equally amazing and powerful at that time that you've probably never heard of. So I guess my point with all of this is that our innovation lab really fuels creativity, like in the agency, and is such a powerful tool that I'm so thankful that we have. All right, Hank, you're in the hot seat again.
Yeah.
And I think your museum is like no other. You couldn't put another artist in it, right? It's nothing like the Da Vinci Museum. It's nothing like the Monet Museum. Why is that?
Well, we sometimes do put other artists in there with Dali, but I think what we do that's unusual, and we do this in our exhibitions, but also we have an innovation lab, the Dali Museum Innovation Lab, and we help groups of people or corporations think of things in new ways, because creativity is really about solving problems. And the human problems that we all encounter are, you know, from our mortality on the highest end back down to, you know, how am I going to navigate breakfast and traffic and getting the kids to school, those things. And to do so, we turn things upside down. We turn things on their head. And so we don't make those terrible assumptions that are usually incorrect about habitually how things go together. We try to find a new way to put things together, and that really is, you know, what surrealism is. It's combining unlike things to create a new reality. Speaking of which, this is the 100th anniversary in 2024 of surrealism, and it's really become, I think, a very dominant mode in the way we approach creative endeavors, to try to mix and match and put things together to create new meanings, to find ways of solving our problems.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the projects that we've done together. The first project we did was called Dreams of Dali, and it was one of the first times that virtual reality had ever actually been used in a museum. And when we think about virtual reality now, we're like, oh, wow, that's old news. Well, this was 2016, so it was pretty amazing at the time. It was pretty breakthrough. So let's watch this, and then we can talk some more. Jeff, I know this is like one of your favorites, and I'm just curious first about the music, because the music is so powerful and like really helps the thing come to life, but just about the experience of making it.
Well, it's a very interesting installation, because there are lines of people waiting to see it. They have three stations at the museum with these Oculus headsets, and you get 3 minutes inside this thing, and basically you walk into one of his paintings. You're transported through it by looking at these little diamonds that are glowing in the distance in various places. If you stare at one for 2 or 3 seconds, it transports you to that part of the landscape that's inside the painting. So in order to do this, we had to teach ourselves all of this wireframe animation. We had to figure out like how to use the VR headset to do what it did. And you know, I think It was a really interesting thing, because it took you inside this painting, which is actually referential. It's called, he titles this, Dali has very interesting titles. It's called Archaeological Reminiscence of Millet's Angelus. Yeah, see? And Jean-Francois Millet had actually painted these two figures that were allegedly saying a prayer at the end of the day out in the field. And Dali saw that, and first of all, he thought that they don't look like they're saying a prayer. It looks like they're mourning about something, and he said, I think they were mourning about the death of their son. Wasn't that what it was? Yeah, and interestingly, They later on x-rayed this painting and found that there was buried in the ground, Millet first painted, a thing that looks rather like a little coffin for a baby underneath the painting itself. So Dali actually intuited that this was going on when Millet painted this thing. It was crazy. Anyway, that doesn't have anything to do with this, but it's a great story.
So the video that we're showing here is an encapsulation of it, but it was a self-navigating experience, and you could actually move through the painting, climb up into those archaeologic ruins, and you did encounter Alice Cooper on the way.
You did, in a hologram. And when you looked up, things flew over. When you looked down, there were ants on the ground. You know, you could move around. It was a 360 experience. You could look everywhere, and there was something to look at. You were really inside the painting landscape, which is crazy. It's worth going there to see. And it's very heartening to watch people, like, wait in line to look at the thing, and they come out smiling. They're so happy when they come out. It's great. They're like, it's nuts.
Wait. It passed the six-year-old test, too. I had a six-year-old at that time, and he put the Oculus on and shouted out, "Dad, this is awesome." He said, "Yeah, this works." Actually, the occasion, Margaret, was we were doing a show on the relation of Disney and Dali, and we asked that same question that you've posed here on the screen, and that is, what would Dali do? But we also had, what would Disney do? And they obviously would collaborate, and they wouldn't use arcane technology. They would look for whatever was newest, and at that time, it was VR. So that's what we put together.
If you know your VR hardware, you might have noticed that the headset in there was a development kit. So this was made before any consumer device was released. So it might seem like, oh yeah, you could probably do something like this today, but this was a long time ago. It's still available to download if you have the right setup, because you need to connect it to PC VR. But it does hold up remarkably well. Even after all those years, and you know, we still have people reviewing it in the Oculus store, talking about how what an amazing experience this was. So, if you have the right hardware, all those things they just talked about, you can try that for yourself.
When was that initially put in? Because you said something about 2016.
2016,
yeah. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Good.
So all right. Let's move on, because we got a lot to get through. Dali Lives was the next project that we did together. And Hank, we have a video to show, but I'm just curious to hear from you. Like, why is this more than just like a clever tech in this experiment?
Oh, you know, it's really the fulfillment of Dali's long aspiration. He was very concerned about his mortality. And just to tell you very quickly why, he had a brother who was born 2 years before he, and whose name was Salvador Dali, and he died. And so Dali was really a replacement child, and always kind of saddled with the sense of, am I myself, or am I the other? And he goes back to Greek mythology. Do you know the story of Leda and the swan? Zeus in the form of a swan couples with Leda, and they have twins. One is mortal, one is immortal. So Dali thought of himself as the immortal, but like all of us, he ages. And at a certain point, he said, he lived in a little town called Cadiz in Spain, and he said, if someday I may die, though it is unlikely, I hope the people in the cafes of Cadiz will say, Dali is gone, but not entirely. So this really fulfills that aspiration to bring him back to life with AI.
Long-standing relationship with death. Almost 30 years. I in life always believe the desire to survive and the fear of death were artistic sentiments. I understand that better now. But there is one thing that makes me different. I do not believe in my death. Do you?
A lot of work to create this one, and I think you were under like some pretty heavy time constraints at the time. Can you talk about that a little?
Well, the time constraint was the 100th anniversary of Dolly's death, which is ironic after what Hank was saying. that's when we introduced it. And it's at three places in the museum. There are these boxes, sort of 6 or 8 feet high. And Dolly appears in the distance, walks toward you, and speaks to you. And this experience was created by a machine learning of all of the interviews, all of the film that we could find of Dolly where he's facing the camera. We machine learned his face, and we put it on an actor's body. We actually got, we went out of our way to find a voice that matched. I mean, nowadays, I suppose we could have just created the voice in AI.
I think but, so.
In fact, we did. The thing that Martin played at the beginning was made out of Dolly's voice, and there'll be more. But in those days, back in the Stone Age, we actually found somebody in Barcelona who spoke almost exactly like Dolly, and we basically had an actor lip sync what the guy says. So, but the thing is, when you're in the presence of this thing, you realize this is actually what Dolly's face looked like. It's not an actor. It's not some fake thing. That's what he looked like. That's what he would be like standing in front of you, which is really uncanny. It's an amazing thing. And the best one of the three boxes, because he appears saying different things, including where the men's room and ladies' room are. but in the final box, he says, would you like to take a selfie with Dolly? And he pulls out an iPhone, and he turns around, and he takes a selfie with you that you're in. He's in the foreground. He often looks at it and doesn't like it. This is no good. I have to do another one. And he does. And then he says, if you want your selfie, go to this number and it will be delivered to you. And it comes to you. And people take their phone out. They look at the thing and they're like, holy shit! I mean, it's just it's amazing. And they're in the photo with Dolly.
Well, that was totally magical, what you guys put together in terms of the technology. But what also characterized, I think, our relationship is that we did so much work to make this something that was real. He only says things except for about 5% where he says, because we're in St. Petersburg, Florida, go Rays, the Tampa Bay Rays, or tells us what the climate, you know, enjoy the rain today. But 95% of what he says are things, words that he had written or spoken in his life. So we were very scrupulous about bringing back something that you could learn about Dolly from. And that was enriching in my mind.
And there's one other detail. He's reading a newspaper every day in one of the boxes before he speaks to you. In the newspaper, every day is today's Tampa Bay Times.
Yeah.
So we are also here to talk about AI. So let's dig a little deeper in how this was actually made, because this was made with generative adversarial networks. Today we're talking a lot about diffusers and transformers, and that's sort of the technology that creates generative AI today. But generative adversarial networks, or GANs, that was the first time we in the creative industry at large could actually start to create fake images that were great, that could produce great art. We could bring Dali back to life. And even the way the generative adversarial networks work is something that just fuels the imagination of creative technologists such as myself. We literally talk about these two competing neural network agents competing in a zero-sum game. One is creating fake data over and over, and the other is trying to tell is this fake or not, comparing it to real data. And at some point, it guesses right only about half the time, and that means that we've gone so deep that the fake data is mistaken for the real thing. And a lot of great things have come from that exact technology, and a lot of bad things too, because that is, you probably heard me combining two words there that we hear a lot in the mainstream discourse today. So generative AI probably entered the public imagination and the public discourse Well, we can precisely say when it happened, because it happened in November 2022, when OpenAI released ChatGPT, and shortly before that, released the first version of DALL-E, and that's when we were all like, whoa, this is incredible. But this project came out in 2018. So in 2022, we had done generative AI with the DALL-E Museum and our agency for years. We were just now moving on to better, faster, and even more powerful tools. This was a hard project to do, but it's getting easier and more accessible to people who don't necessarily know how to install PyTorch on their computer at home. There are better ways to do that now. But back then, we relied on PyTorch a lot.
Well, on the topic of OpenAI and DALL-E, let's move on to the Dream Tapestry, because that was one of the first uses of DALL-E in a museum. So let's watch this and talk a little more.
The Dream Tapestry is an experience at the DALL-E Museum that lets people create a representation of their dreams. To be able to do that, we brought OpenAI's DALL-E to the DALL-E Museum. A visitor describes a personal dream. Then, the AI combines six personal dreams together to create one big collective dream, exhibited on a 12-foot-tall interactive screen. To generate each dream, the AI uses a combination of art styles featured in the Shape of Dreams exhibit.
The Dream Tapestry is the first DALL-E-enabled exhibit in a museum. And we're so excited about it because it's going to be a debut of how DALL-E can enhance all types of people's creativity.
It's really awesome. You know, you can kind of peer into everybody's mind a little.
I think I got it spot on.
Yep.
A great canvas that we can all share our experiences on, our dreams.
Kind of speechless. When people look back on the things that are created in this project, it's going to be a snapshot of what creativity and AI and dreams mean right now.
So there seems to be, there are a couple of themes here, right? Immortality and now dreams. Jeff, why dreams?
Well, DALL-E was really interested in dreams. You can tell from his art. A lot of it was inspired by dreamlike things. He actually would take naps and hold this particular spoon. It was like a leaden spoon, I believe, a heavy spoon in his hand as he was falling asleep. And he'd fall asleep, and as he began to dream, the spoon would fall out of his hand, make a noise, and wake him up. And he would remember the dream that way, or at least that was the story. And that's where a lot of his dreamscapes came from, his inspiration for his paintings and his creations. And he trusted in the idea of the subconscious, that there were things inside you that you could bring out, and if you were open to it. And he forced his life to be about being open to those things. And that's what this does. And my favorite part of the Dream Tapestry is when on a particular day at a particular time, you'll see that people are dreaming like similar things, like when it comes together and it makes the tapestry, there's like a theme to it, you know? There's like, this is a bad day, you know, it's thunderstorms outside. You kind of see, you see themes start to develop that everybody's thinking. So you sort of get America's dream for the day in these tapestries, which is crazy. It's a collective dream.
Yeah. I was curating an exhibition about dreams. It took five centuries of European and American paintings. And in planning that, we were looking for a way, we kept talking about it. How can we give the visitor an experience of their dreams the same way that the artist conveys his or her dreams? And there was no technology. We had some blind alleys for about a year till we could find a technology by which we could do this and start to share people's dreams visually so that they could take them with them on their phones and reflect on them in the style of one of the artists in the show. It's a great experience.
And this wasn't just the first use of DALL-E in a museum. It was really one of the first uses of DALL-E 2 anywhere. Mm. It was amazing.
Yeah, we got pre-release access to it. It was a great partnership. And now we are moving up to like present times of what generative AI, the kind of technology that powers it. But there's a relationship, again, between what we do in Salvador Dali, because Dali 2 is what we call a diffusion model. And that's sort of that's the most powerful way to generate art today. And diffusion models are inspired by nature. That's one of the things that has happened in computer science since I got my degree a while ago, where we're now, well, instead of all these logic-based systems, let's look at how nature works. So in this case, the second law of thermodynamics, where we know that because of entropy, everything in the universe is moving towards chaos, and that is inevitable. We know that the second law of thermodynamics is inevitable. We'll all turn to dust one day. Learn to live with it. Diffusion actually tries to reverse that process. So starting with the chaos, or with the noise, as it says, it goes reverses it and extracts meaning from it. It extracts art from the noise and the chaos of the universe. And you know, the question is always here, what would Dalí do? I think he would appreciate the cosmic nature of this process, the fact that we're actually able to reach into the chaotic minds of the visitors to the museum and extract their dreams and show them to you on this tapestry.
Okay, well, let's zoom out for a minute, because we talked a lot about the past, and I want to know a little about the future. So what, to all of you, what is the future of creativity, and what role do museums play in that?
Well, we have an attempt at that one. Well, museums historically have been repositories of objects, and I think they're moving now to be places for common experience, communal experience. And if they used to be places to kind of recalibrate our view of our history, now they're places to negotiate the present and to look to the future, to make it new. And that puts museums right at the heart of creativity, because creativity is about shortening the distance between who we are and who we aspire to be, between what we have and what we want to create around us. And I think that museums are then guaranteed a place in the history and the future of creativity for that reason. And what we're aspiring to do is exactly what we need to aspire to do with our creativity, to create experiences that are full of meaning and full of promise. Kevin.
That's great.
Yeah, I think that there's a certain amount of dissatisfaction that fuels creativity, I think. You have to be dissatisfied with what you have in front of you right now and want to think about ways of molding it, changing it, putting it. And that's why I think that surrealism is such an influential school of art, a way to think about the world, actually. And of course, that's what the AI does. It's a probability machine. It basically says if there's this, there's a high probability that this is the thing that will follow, and a high probability this is the thing that will follow that, which is essentially surrealism. It's that putting things together that don't belong together, like Hank said. And I think that is that's the human role in this thing, is to start that ball rolling, you know?
In computer science, we've lost the branding war because we don't even like to call it artificial intelligence. It's not artificial intelligence. We prefer the term machine learning because that's a more accurate description of what it does. But I know we've lost the brand war, so we'll call it artificial intelligence. But the reason is that it's not actually intelligent. Jeff just said that. It's just math models with a lot of data that predicts what the next pixel should look like or what the next word should be. So that's fundamentally what they are. Real creativity still comes from humans. Generative AI is just a way for us to quickly sketch out ideas, but we need our imagination, we need our intelligence, we need our creativity to tell the bad work from the good work and to then elevate the good work and put it in a place where it belongs and throw out all the bad stuff. I will, in fact, well, my wife says that I'm a very, very, almost too optimistic person sometimes, so take what I'm about to say maybe with a grain of salt, but I actually think that we could be entering a golden age of creativity thanks to generative AI. I think we can have a whole new generation of artists who can work with tools unlike never before. You don't need to spend the 2 years I spent to learn Photoshop before I can start to make amazing things. And I think that's gonna democratize the way we do art. I come from theater originally, but went into to computer science because the magic of realizing that the code that I wrote on the screen could make pixels move in front of me, that was a magical experience to realize that this, hey, I made this happen. This is what, I mean, creative technologist was not a title that was invented at the time, but it was one that I really embraced when it popped up to the surface around 2010 or something like that. And back then I did experiments all the time, like, oh my God, I can make all these amazing things. But you needed to code to do that, and that still closed it for a lot of people. There were gates to get through to be able to get to that. And now, not so much anymore. This is getting easier and easier. And I stayed up all night doing experiments when I was young, and when Stable Diffusion, the open source diffusion model, came out of beta a couple of years ago, I got access to it, I installed it. That was kind of complicated back then. But when I got it up and running, all of a sudden, it was 3 a.m. in the morning. I didn't know what had happened, but time had just flown by while I did these experiments and brought back the magic of the first time I learned how to code and made pixels move on the screen. Now, the difference between back then and now is that my toddler still woke up at 6:30 the next morning, so I had a rough day after pulling an all-nighter with code. But I think that people without kids, people with kids, will have the opportunity to do that because the tools are ready for you to use to power your creativity.
So the years that we've put in learning to code, learning Photoshop, learning, those were wasted, basically.
It's not a complete waste. But we will be more efficient working with those tools.
Okay. So. Thanks, Martin.
Well, one of the things that I'm most excited about today is to share the newest experience that we've been working on together. And why don't we play, let's play the video and then we can talk about it. It's called Ask DALL-E.
For years, people have attempted to understand my work, trying to find meaning in the surreal, to make sense of the dreams of a historic genius. But how can anyone possibly know what is inside the burning mind of Salvador Dalí? No, they simply cannot. They are mere mortal human beings. But now I can tell you. Introducing Ask Dalí, an audio experience powered by AI and machine learning that allows you to talk to me.
Why are the clocks melting?
My dear questioner, think not of the clocks as merely melting. Picture them as a vast dream.
Why are their legs so thin?
Who's your favorite painter? Do you really dream of all those things? What's up with your mustache?
Greetings. I am Salvador Dalí, and you can ask me anything. Just pick up your phone.
All right, so Ask DALL-E. we're gonna do a little demo of Ask DALL-E. It's gonna take a minute for Martin to set it up. So in the meantime, I'm gonna ask Hank about the significance of the lobster phone.
Well, DALL-E always covered his tracks, and he once said, I do not understand when I go to a restaurant and order a lobster that they do not bring me a boiled telephone. And he was thinking at that time of putting together the lobster and the telephone, great surrealist synthesis of something that gives you a new meaning. And you can imagine, actually, you have to choose, you're gonna have the hearing or the mouthpiece. Which part of the lobster do you want near your ear and your mouth?
Well,
so Martin, live, go ahead.
Live demo on stage at South by, it's the scariest thing in the world for a creative technologist. So let's see how
it goes. Let's pick up the phone.
Well, actually, let me ask DALL-E, why am I even doing this? You could have just shown you the video, but.
Hi. I am Salvador Dalí, and you can ask me anything.
Okay. Hello, Mr. Dalí. I'm about to do a live prototype demo on stage at South by Southwest, and I gotta admit I'm a little nervous. What if something goes wrong?
Thank you.
Embrace your stage, for it is but a canvas and your prototype, a dream woven into tangible threads. Let the possibility of mishaps not deter you, but fuel your creative fervor. Should something wander astray, remember, a misstep in the possession of innovation is merely a step toward the extraordinary. Approach the canvas of uncertainty with the brush of audacity. Fear not the shadow of error, for in its depth lies the luminescence of discovery.
Okay. I feel a lot better now, thanks to that. It's almost like Dali is in the room with us right now, so let's actually find out if he is. Mr. Dali, are you here in the room with us right now?
In the fabric of space and time, my presence weaves through dimensions unknown. Though I may not stand before you in the flesh, my essence fills the air like perfume, unseen but undeniably there, like a clock melting over the edge of a table. My spirit defies the conventional bounds of here or there.
All right. It feels like I really can ask him anything, and we are in Austin, Texas, so maybe we should go out and get tacos later. Let's hear what his favorite taco place is. Mr. Dali, we're thinking about going out for tacos after this panel. Do you have a good recommendation for a taco place here in Austin?
The exploration of tacos, a quest seemingly mundane, fails to ignite the fires of my imagination. Let us delve into realms that transcend the culinary, where the flavors of thought and the spices of the cosmos intertwine. Seek out questions that vibrate with the essence of dreams and possibility.
Okay.
All right, well, we want to open it up to the audience. So if any of you have a question for Salvador Dali, just come up to the mic and ask.
Just not about tacos, I guess. So I'm going to ask the question for you. It's still a prototype. So.
Clearly, for all his experience and innovation, he didn't understand Austin tacos. Salvador, Mr. Dali, what is next for you in the next 100 years of creativity?
Good question.
Nice.
Salvador, Mr. Dali, what is next for you in the next 100 years of creativity?
A magnificent seeker of truths not yet painted. The next 100 years shall unfold like a clock melting over the edge of eternity. My essence transcending temporal bounds shall embark on a journey through dreams uncharted. In this odyssey, each brushstroke will be a prophecy, each sculpture a testament to the absurdity of existence. Behold as I shape the unseen, bending the cosmos to my will, birthing creations that dance at the edge of imagination and reality.
I hope you like the answer.
Hello, Mr. Dali. My name is Helen Todd. I have a podcast called Creativity Squared that explores the intersection of AI and creativity. Will you be a guest, and what is the best question to ask you?
All right. Mr. Dali, would you be interested in being a guest on a podcast that explores the intersection between AI and creativity? And what would be a good question to ask you on such a podcast? Did I get it right? All right.
Imagining a conversation with a digital mind meets the delirious heart of creation, I am intrigued. To dissect the enigma of AI and creativity, you could ask, how can the cold, calculated precision of artificial intelligence be melted into the surreal, liquid dreams of human creativity? A fusion of opposites, a dialogue between the mechanical and the mystical. That is where the future lies.
Thanks, Camille.
Well, well, I'm not going to ask him that question now because maybe we can explore that on the podcast. So there's a teaser for later.
Can you tell us how this works, Martin?
I mean, it's that little wait for the
yes.
Dolly answer reminds me of that eight ball thing that we used to have.
Yeah. Well, we have
it's a lot better than that.
We have a lot of electrons traveling great distances to get us to a point where this talks. Actually, we had a discussion about how to introduce what we do as creative technologists in labs, and I objected to being called mad scientists because we are not scientists. We might be a little mad, but we're not scientists. But we do stand on the shoulders of giants, in this case, the scientists. So the research work that comes out, whether it comes out from the great tech companies, whether it comes out from academia, that is what we put to work. We saw a project with generative adversarial networks earlier. I believe the paper came out in 2016 or 2017, and in 2018 we could start to put it into production. So we are combining a lot of different amazing technology here. I built my first chatbot in 2011. It was really hard and it was not very good, but now we have large language models that allow us to build applications. So working with the DALL-E Museum, we have a large language model powering this, and they have shared with us the most important writings of Salvador Dalí, or English translations of those writings. And his words, translated into English, are being emphasized in the response that Dalí will give to any question here. But it also, at the same time, has the entire encyclopedial knowledge of a large language model, and that is why I can ask him, well, not tacos, but I guess everything else. And then on top of that, we have, as Jeff teased before, we have cloned his voice from voice samples of interviews that he gave in English, archival footage that the DALL-E Museum has shared with us. Once again, cloning voices is something that is, I guess you could say, a little bit too easy to do because you see bad actors doing it too, but it can be used to create absolutely wonderful things like this one. So if you go to YouTube and find videos of Salvador Dalí, that's what he sounds like when he speaks English. And then we combine a couple of those things, and that takes a little while. It takes some round trips to some servers here and there before the response comes back. This actually is supposed to be a conversation in a telephone, so his voice will come out of the headpiece and you're talking into the microphone. That's not a great experience on a stage, so we put him up there. But the rotary telephone will have a little computer inside it that does all the hard work, connects to the internet, and then, you know, hopefully thousands of people can ask Dalí when this comes out in the museum.
We can open it up to just a Q&A now if you have any questions about Ask Dalí or any questions about any of the work actually that you saw today.
I'm gonna hang up the phone.
Yes.
That's where the word comes from, hanging up.
You can put the lobster back, yeah. So first of all, thank you. This has been so extraordinary. I'm ready to get on the next plane to Florida. Thank you for bringing Dalí to life. And I'd love to hear from each of you as you personally travel across the planet, where do you see the creative centers emerging? Like, is it the Museum of the Future in Dubai? Is it the Sphere? And how do you separate these experiences that feel so human from sometimes these things that feel a little bit more like gimmicky?
Jeff, you want to take that one?
So, you know, what are the places of great creativity? I think children, you know? I mean, I think that Einstein said that all creativity has a childlike side to it, and that's proving to be clinically true, actually. You know, maintaining that kind of innocent way of looking at the world where you don't have an overlay of expectation, you know? And I think children they're very useful to have around.
That's the good thing about children.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, there's a lot of trouble. Yeah.
You want to ask a question?
Yeah, just a question about rights usage. How did you get
the approval to use his likeness and his works and derivatives of that.
So I think one of the points that was made is that the AI creates a simulacrum of Dali. There's not a single in the video, the large video monitors in which he's telling you about his work, not a single frame is from an actual photo. It's recreated. So it's a derivative work made from all the things that could be gathered, images of Dali. So I think the question of derivative works, you know, is governed under different laws, different in Europe than they are in the United States. And it's a brave new frontier. It's an interesting area.
I mean, legally, it's proving to be really thorny and difficult to clarify that stuff. And of course, when an AI is scraping imagery, things come back that could very easily be identified and perhaps contended with. We may soon see our feeling about copyright change considerably. Who knows? I'm not a lawyer, but it feels like some major shit is about to happen.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. Like, we really appreciate it.
Thank you.